Park Place Meeting, Thursday morning, 17th June 1976, Second Talk. There are one or two aspects of this Kabbalistic presentation which are of great significance for us at our everyday human level. You may recall I mentioned how wisdom, chokhmah, by sheer presence stimulates bina, which holds the feminine, which is the feminine principle, the mother principle. It is actually called the mother principle in the Kabbalah, and the other is called the father principle, stimulates bina, by which the whole universal process starts up. And this stimulation is a true fecundating, a true creative activity. It is customary for human beings, quite naturally, to think in terms of a beginning. That's how the whole thing started up. The correct way to understand it is that it is something which goes on perpetually. There is a timeless conjugation between the two aspects, and not only between the two aspects, but in complete relationship with the infinite, the unknown transcendent. Because it is out of the unknown transcendent, or rather I should say, this unknown transcendent is the creative energy which is perpetual creation. It manifests in two ways. One, as primordial chaos, where there is no production of separate finite particulars, but there is creative activity going on of a nature which is utterly unimaginable. It is a state which is vibrant, which is dynamic, but its dynamism is something which I cannot begin to express. And there is the other aspect of this constant creation which brings things forth, produces cosmos out of this primordial chaos. So there is this state of timeless conjugation as the supreme reality underlying the entire process, which includes the living process and the development, the growth and the fruition of man himself. It is timeless, it is virginal, everlastingly virginal, it is everlastingly pure, acausal, free of the dualities of good, evil, cause, effect, and all that kind of thing. These are our interpretations at our level, which are correct for our level. Depends in which mode of consciousness you are aware of the whole thing. Now, this bina, or intelligence, is the ultimate source of what is termed in the second chapter of Genesis, the woman whom the Lord God made out of the rib of Adam and brought unto him. We must not mix up this woman with Hava, who is called Eve, the mother of all living. Now let us look a little closely into what actually happens in us. Here is a living organism, the man, evolved out of a primordial ancestor belonging to an animal, who represents an animal species. When that animal species began to develop and change, there began to emerge in him the effects of an immanence at work. This immanence is Yahweh, the Jehovah of the Bible. This is Yahweh. That aspect of the creative energy which produces the whole universe of things as such is Elohim, is named Elohim. The two names for God, Elohim, translated as God in the Bible in English, and Yahweh as the Lord. And sometimes, where necessary, you find Yahweh, Elohim, both terms used, hyphenated. Then it is translated as the Lord God. What exactly does Elohim mean? It is made of the two words Ele, representing the eternal object or the eternal what in interaction with me, M-I, the Hebrew M-I, me, representing the eternal who or the eternal subject. This eternal subject, object are one, not in disjunction within this fundamental, ultimate creative energy. But there is this desire to know which comes up. And in the desiring to know, there is this perpetual interaction between positive and negative. The woman, Bina, the primordial woman, the divine woman, Bina, is that which is presented to Adam. Adam means of the ground, also means of the firmament. Now, Adam undeveloped, because this organism did evolve out of a primordial animal, being unevolved, undeveloped, becoming vaguely conscious of this source of creation, was unable to utilize the awakening in the right way. There wasn't that development of self-understanding, of inner purity and poise, which could have enabled Adam to be the true mate for the woman as presented to him. That is Bina, intelligence. Now, Bina is the inspirer, the great power which makes man aspire to his supreme fulfillment, to arrive at the complete realization of all that is potential within him. And that which is potential within him is Yahweh, the Lord. So, the result is that he becomes conscious for a flash, for a moment, of transcendence as such. He is unable to live up to it. If he could live up to it, then he would not have scarred the tree of life by plucking its fruit, when he plucked its fruit. He didn't pluck it, the woman plucked it and gave it to him. That's how it is put about in symbolical terms. We have to try and understand it psychologically, in terms of what happens to ourselves. The tree of life has so many different applications. For us, fundamentally, the tree of life is our own brain, nervous system, spinal cord. That is our tree of life. And the fruit of this tree of life is consciousness. But consciousness of what sort? If it is this awareness which is the state of communion with the totality, then our discriminative consciousness, as it functions in us, never acts separatively in a manner that will split, which will tend to sunder the unity of the universe, the unity of ourselves. It will never tend to sunder the state of communion. But because we are not developed, we are not truly self-disciplined, therefore this isolativeness enters the situation. And this is the scarring of the tree of life, when one eats of the fruit of the tree of life, consciousness. And because we get confined to discriminative consciousness, where we take sides with pleasure against pain, with a state of comfort against a state which involves work, which involves activity for fresh creation, because we do that, therefore this tree of life is transformed into the tree of good and evil. The same tree, brain, nervous system, spinal cord. Our conflicts, our dis-eases, our expulsion from paradise, the state of ease, from Eden Garden, takes place. Now do remember, all this takes place continuously through us. This is what we forget. We are so caught up in this time consciousness. Oh, it began like this, then it went on like that, and then it goes on like this, and then it could come to such and such an end, or such and such an end, and so on. We are conscious in that way. But if we really see that the process is timeless all the time, the Yahvic immanence is always urging us to open out. The divine woman, the inspirer within us, is all the time the transcendent feminine, who is the permanent mate of the transcendent masculine. A timeless conjugation. Therefore, perpetual creativeness goes on. That is why we live and continue to live and to change. Now, if you can sort of really get the feel of this, you will get the feel of the phrase I've used in my book, death is the other life. But not the other life of a separate self-conscious and separatively self-conscious entity. The entity vanishes at death, of the organism, because the being is now returned to the non-being, and the non-being is one and total and characterless, just as Ein Sof, the ultimate, the absolute, is characterless. There's no distinguishing characteristics as such. Whereas that one non-being expresses out of itself the innumerable separate beings, and then spring up entity, names, distinctions, and so forth. Entity completely disappears at the dissolution of the particular manifestation. Identifiable entity. That is why I have all said, not always said, because I believed lock, stock, and barrel in the old formulation of the teachings. I have been saying for some years now that the reincarnational picture in any form is an inadequate picture. It's a misleading picture. Because entity disappears when the being goes into the one total non-being. You can't identify. All right. During our lifetime, we can realize non-being in being. In realizing non-being in our own being, we have re-entered Eden, paradise, nirvana, the kingdom of heaven, call it what you like. You see how this, I hope it does, lightens up things which remain inexplicable and incomprehensible otherwise. Now, this state of union with the divine feminine, Esha, is the marriage made in heaven, the Hieros Gamos, is the ultimate marriage in heaven. It has its counterpart in our own single being at the psychical level. Every man and every woman is actually male-female. We are not exclusively male or exclusively female. We are both male-female. As and when, through discipline, we learn and grow in such a manner that the masculine and feminine elements in us function in complete harmony, this is the first expression in actual fact, here now, in the organic world, of the marriage made in heaven. This is the first marriage in heaven. And this marriage means that there is absolutely no discord. It's a very important thing to understand. When the masculine and feminine elements in our own nature are understood and express themselves naturally and harmoniously, then this state of marriage is a timeless state. Here it's a case of timelessness expressing itself as perpetuity. It is continuous from split second to split second, and it is within the compass of our knowing through discriminative consciousness, but a discriminative consciousness which does not isolate, which does not separate. But you see what is involved here. The divine feminine and the divine male function purely through fecundation by stimulus, presence, sheer presence. When we realize that state at our psychical level, maintain that permanent conjugation of the masculine and feminine elements in us by sheer stimulus, not through the utterly unspoiled by the interposition of any desire. In our activities in daily life, in all our activities, desire plays its part. The cooperation of the masculine and feminine elements in our psychophysical being is not a natural, spontaneous cooperation. There is the disturbing activity of desire. And all desire is divisive in its functioning, whatsoever the desire may be. However sublime and exalted the desire may be, it is a divisive force, not a force which lets alone and allows to function in peace this timeless conjugation. When there is this timeless conjugation, you are happy. Now, this timeless conjugation at the transcendental level of Chokhmah and Bina, of the masculine and feminine elements interacting in Prakriti itself in relationship to Purusha as presented by the Sankhya, this is the transcendent origin of the meaning, the significance and the activity of love in its reality, in its ultimate absolute reality. You know how throughout the various cultures, wisdom and strength are symbolized in the male, love and beauty are symbolized as the female. This, something like this, is the ultimate root of what we experience as human interrelationships and marriage and all the rest of it. Those whom God hath joined together. What the transcendent has joined together is right within each and every one of us, male and female alike. But that which was in original intention, a unity, is sundered by our undevelopment, our unawakenedness. And therefore the masculine and feminine elements in our own nature are in conflict. When, for instance, we want to do something and our moral sense or social sense or whatever it is gets up and says, oh no, 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 you mustn't do that. That is the male father figure. You see, wielding the big stick. And the other is the female. Again, the female element in us, in each and every one of us, is the one that wants to remain secure. That is, we come into a situation where things are going smoothly. Ah, this is nice. I've got the right kitchen and the right cupboards my husband's not a bad fellow. He's all right. He's a good chap. He must continue like that and he mustn't change. And so forth, you see. The female tendency at our very concrete level, the female tendency is the stay put tendency. The male tendency is, oh yes, this was all right, now let's chuck it out, let's have something new, make way for something better, and so forth. The female says, well, will I have to give up this or that and comfort or something which I know, will something unknown come in? No, then that's not good, out with it. So you see, these two elements are perpetually in conflict with us. And both the elements suffer from our ignorance. We are ignorant all along the line, aren't we? What do we know? We know frightfully little. And it's quite true to say that we just don't know anything. So, if we can begin to appreciate how transcendence itself is really embodied in us all the time, it functions in its transcendent manner within us, but it is hindered all the time by our undeveloped condition. Now this plucking of the fruit of the tree of life, actually, as it stands in the Bible, I think is not quite correctly put. The fruit that the woman plucked the tree, the fruit of the tree of good and evil. No, she took the fruit of the tree of life, and she, representing Bina, the transcendent intelligence, was all right. She gave it to Adam, who was not developed. He was a little bit like a man knocked on the head, a little bit dazed, or perhaps a man who had one too much in the pub, you see, and just couldn't make right use of it. This is where all the trouble started. So this tree of life became the tree of good and evil. Restrictive choice came into play. But because man had also the vision of the transcendent at work, because there were a few, and a few always keep coming into being in the world's life, it was taught that man should be utterly pure, utterly undesirous. I'm trying to indicate the transcendent origins of our moralities and so forth. You see, there is this moral imperative in us. This moral imperative is the expression, or is that something which is struggling to be the right expression of this transcendent morality, which has no compulsiveness in it. This is all very difficult to indicate and to talk about. The transcendent is non-compulsive, and yet it is omnipotent. And our moral imperative within us derives from that. But because there isn't clarity of vision, the mind itself is not utterly transparent, void of all the particular fixed beliefs and so forth. This moral imperative is in conflict with things that we want to do or to enjoy and so forth. The importance of trying to see that which is transcendent, to trying to get a vision of it, is just this, that when one does get a flash of clear vision, so much that is unclear here disappears. When we go through a discipline, through being told, do this, do the other, and so forth, we are only dealing with ourselves like we deal with any room in our own home, just rearranging the same old furniture. There is no newness about it. There is no creation about it. But the living process is a creative process and a creative activity. It is not a product of thinking out. As and when the psychophysicality, which is ourselves as we are, is quiet and silent, this creative activity of transcendence embodied in us suddenly throws out the new thought, the fresh impulse. Something which you never knew before, which you never saw before. Utterly fresh. And then what emerges out of that expresses true creative living. And one important proviso, one must never grasp at it, never want to keep it. This presentation of the Kabbalah, and it's the same sort of presentation in the oldest of the Upanishads too, the same sort of presentation. It's very important to understand this. That is to say, if you are interested along such lines, you will find it not only in the Upanishads, you will also find it presented in its own way in Mahayana. It doesn't come in Theravada. Theravada confines itself to the more or less confined, not altogether, more or less confines itself to the practical discipline of the mind and so forth, the mind and the body. You know how the Dhyani Buddhas in Mahayana are always presented with their consorts in conjugation. This timeless conjugation. So that is precisely the same sort of thing as the Kabbalah and the Upanishadic teachings have also done. Now, if one can appreciate this, one will really appreciate why sex and all that it stands for in our nature is so very important. It is the most powerful blind natural urge in the living creature after he has come to physical maturity. And why it is such a tremendous problem to us, we'll understand that. This lack of harmony between the masculine feminine elements in ourselves, because of the interference of specialized particular desire, ambition, helped so powerfully by ignorance and by fear, that sex is a problem with us. It would disappear as a problem and find natural, spontaneous, and unerringly right expression if we understood ourselves. The question arises, how can we arrive at such understanding? Look at the way we are brought up. Yes, that is the trouble. Our parents and their parents and their parents and their parents, we have all suffered from ignorance in this matter. And so it's a pain and a tribulation and a mess maker time and again. But we here, we ourselves are parents, and if our children care to listen to us, which is of course a big question mark altogether, knowing the modern world, if our children care to listen to us, something new might be started. One might light a lamp, there might be a light in the world as was never seen before on sea or land, as the saying goes. You see, this frustrated creative urge is one of the most responsible elements in all wars and conflicts and horror, in cruelty, oppression, destruction, and so forth. One can never overstress the importance of purity. Purity in the right sense. It has to be intelligent. Not something, you mustn't do this, you must do that. Not that sort of thing. That's no good. That is under the thrall of ignorance. But there must be understanding. If you and I can understand these things, and help others from their childhood onwards to understand these things, then there'll be a big difference in human relationships all over the world. A great difference in the happiness of the family unit. And the family is the fundamental biological unit for mankind, not the separate individual. This is a mistaken idea which crept into our civilization only in recent centuries. The family is the real biological unit. Father, mother, and the sons and daughters together. And when there is a proper family unit, a right start, that person, those children have the chance of flowering out and understanding the profounder realities. And with that, our world order would change completely.